Our Week in Review panel is populated all by fine female journalists this evening, so it's time to destroy the joint.
Going to the course was all about Mandy Rockin'.
Yes, you may remember that I think it was last Friday that Sydney 2GB radio host Alan Jones accused women of destroying the joint. We thought we'd get into a bit of destruction this evening. Joining us for our Week in Review panel are Ellen Fanning, reporter from the Global Mail, Laura Jays, political reporter for Sky News, and Sally Warhaft, anthropologist, writer, and presenter of the Fifth Estate fortnightly forums at the Wheeler Centre in Melbourne. They're in three different locations, so ladies, we can destroy three different places tonight. Thank you very much for joining us for our Week in Review panel.
Great to be here.
All right, well, let's just recap to begin with Jonesy's comments. He was livid over the aid that Prime Minister Gillard announced for the South Pacific countries, $320 million to be spent by Australia promoting Pacific Island women in business and politics.
She said, "We know that societies only reach their full potential if women are politically participating. Women are destroying the joint. Christine Nixon in Sydney, Clover in Melbourne, Clover Moore here, honestly. And we know too that a key indicator of economic advancement is the full inclusion of women in the life of a nation. $320 million, Barnaby, to buy Cubby Station."
And do you think for one moment that that $320 million that they're about to put up against the wall is going to make any difference whatsoever about fixing up, you know, Southern Pacific?
None whatever.
So I just wanted to start by asking you all about the tone of the national debate and the question of gender. I mean, it does seem that, it's not, no surprises when you put Barnaby Joyce and Ellen Jones together that perhaps you don't get cutting-edge feminism. But Sally Warhaft, is there a particular tinge to the national debate at the moment which derives from the fact that the Prime Minister is female?
I think there is, Julian, from time to time, although the Jones rant is something just altogether on its own kind of planet, isn't it? Mm. But if we're talking about the general culture and this idea that it's a very sexist kind of focus against the Prime Minister, I think from time to time it is. But I also think that all our leaders get sort of attacked with a lack of dignity and a kind of, and it's often very personal. And I mean, John Howard, of course, was often attacked for being this and that, and being, you know, being hard of hearing and being short, or So I of course, when it's a female leader and there are comments about her gender, it's kind of sort of astonishing, isn't it, that it can happen now, and pointed remarks about what leaders wear and that sort of thing seems to be confined to women. But what saddens me about all of this is that people like Alan Jones just completely miss the point about what's going on in the kind of countries that Julia Gillard was pointing out are so utterly male dominated. And I mean, that's in Asia Pacific, and you go further afield to places in Africa and South Asia and other parts in the world where women have no voice, and it's just truly, truly insulting.
Laura Jays, the criticism of the Prime Minister, is that just part of the rough and tumble that any political leader would have, do you think?
Oh, yeah, I tend to agree with Sally. The leaders always get sledged, but whether it's just reported more or commented about, or there's more commentary about a female leader getting sledged, well, that's the question really, isn't it? But Alan Jones, wow. what do you say about him? This just says to me that he's totally out of touch, that he's perhaps losing it, and the one thing that annoys me the most about Alan Jones is that he has a glass jaw. When people sledge him, when he cops criticism, he cannot handle it, and he goes out on the attack and doesn't accept that at all. I mean, women are wrecking the joint, please.
Oh, Ellen Fanning, you've been very well behaved since you entered the RN Drive studio so far. Look, what's your take on this? And I suppose I'm particularly interested in the context of the aid announcement, because there's fairly good evidence that targeting aid at women is actually the best way to spend your foreign aid dollar.
I just don't know
where to start with all of this. I just really, yes. You know, maybe it's because I'm a woolly-headed female. But I want to disagree with Sally and Laura. I really do. I think there's something going on. And I think I was at an education forum for women in education, women teachers, female teachers. And this really, Jane Carrow was one of the people on the stage, along with a lot of other women who were happy to call themselves feminists who had interesting stories to tell, older women. And one young woman stood up and said, look, you know, I don't want to be a feminist. I don't want to call myself a feminist. It alienates the men around me. They don't like it when I say that. You know, and I'm a young woman and I want to have, you know, boyfriends and be friends with boys and I don't want that, I don't want to, you know, have them looking at me when I describe myself in that way. Yeah. And, you know, there wasn't a great reaction to that and, you know, I had to kind of say to everyone, well, that's her opinion, let's just hear it. And another young woman stood up and said, you know, I'm the same age and I really want to disagree. And a year ago I would have said that. But now I'm teaching down in a remote area and every Monday morning all the guys come in and they talk about the rugby and or whatever they talk about in that particular part of the world, some form of footy that she wasn't particularly into. And she said, and they all talk to each other and nobody talks to me. And she said, and, you know, I've got it. They say to me, well, you've just got to figure out the footy round here, love. And she said, no, I don't see anyone coming in with the Esprit catalogue to talk to me, to find talking points to talk to me. And I thought, this is interesting. You know, we assume with gay rights and with women's rights that once won, that you don't have to fight that battle anymore. So you don't have to call yourself a feminist. You don't have to worry about it because it's all done and it's all in the past and that old stuff. Anne Summers, God, that was when was that? But I don't think it's true, and I think people are, gay people are finding that out in Queensland at the moment, and I think we're finding out what's going on here. And I think the aid piece, the objection to the aid piece, you see that again and again. We put up a thing on theglobalmail.org, which was a photographic essay looking at one of the biggest social problems that's increasing in our society today is homelessness among older, single women, challenging the stereotype of who is homeless. So they're not sleeping rough, they're not getting counted in those statistics, but because of societal change and divorce and all sorts of things, they're really at risk and they're couch surfing from friend to friend and all sorts of things. And they talked about the need for a gender, to put a gender lens on homelessness policy. Well, how dare we? How dare we? Yeah, I would have thought effectiveness was the test of all these things rather than the genderness.
Sally?
Sorry. That, I was referring to the treatment of the Prime Minister, not about whether or not Australia is a sexist society. And, I mean, I think we are still a profoundly sexist, macho kind of society in many ways. But in talking about leadership, where women actually tend to get a bit more of a go in some areas like politics, certainly not the media in positions of real power, that you know, women at the top end do a bit better here than perhaps in other areas of life. So I think they're two really separate things.
Okay, well, look, let's move on to talking about a couple of women at the top of their fields. And I suppose it's a question of who really is destroying the joint. Prime Minister Gillard has pulled out of speaking at the Australian Christian Lobby's national conference after its leader, Jim Wallace, suggested that a homosexual, quote, lifestyle was more hazardous to health than smoking. So tobacco, gays or Christianity or women. Laura Jays, do you think that the Prime Minister was right to pull out of this conference?
Well, yeah, I tend to agree with you here. I had some libs trying to spin to me that, no, she shouldn't have pulled out this week and that it was pathetic and that she should have stood up to him. But, you know, sometimes you just have to suck these debates of airtime. If she would have turned up, there would have been a big media frenzy around it. Still, there was a media frenzy because she did pull out.
Yeah.
But, you know, it only lasted for a few hours yesterday and perhaps it was in some columns today. But I think she's sucked it of oxygen and it was the right thing to do. But then you've got to listen to Jim Wallace, who was on radio yesterday actually saying, no, he didn't actually say that. He only likened it and, you know, splitting hairs there. But yeah. I think she was actually right to do that.
Sally Warhoff, what's your take on that one?
I think it's just a no-brainer that she had to not address this idiot. I mean, for a Prime Minister to legitimise his organisation at which he was speaking as a representative of, to make such insane comments, I don't know who... he's diminished Christians in doing this. The only people that would be possibly happy about it would be, you know, incredibly sort of fundamental Christian smokers. Or so. I mean, it's really... it was absurd. And a Prime Minister can't lend her authority and the dignity of the office to a group like that. No way. Yeah,
below her.
I actually think it's quite brave. I think there's probably quite a few fundamentalist Christian smokers out there, more than we would like to acknowledge, perhaps. I don't know whether they inhale, and there's obviously a fair bit of phallic confusion going around about what you do with cigarettes and any other things that might have that shape. But anyway, moving on from that, nevertheless, I think I remember George Megalogenes in The Australian in 07 going through the census and working out where the fundamentalist Christians and born-again Christians live, and it's in marginal seats.
Right.
So, you know, I think this is brave, and I wonder whether she's taken a look at Ann Summers' column, and if people haven't had a look at it, go, you know, Google Ann Summers, It Stops With Me, which is a marvellous address Ann gave at the end of last month up at the University of Newcastle, talking about the vilification of the Prime Minister on the basis of her sex. Mm. And she basically said, wherever you find bigotry, you need to actually give voice to it and say, it stops with me. And if you find racism in your workplace, or sexism in your workplace, or this sort of nonsense, you need to actually say calmly and in a dignified way, it stops with me.
Well, to arguably a less fine address now, Gina Reinhart spoke out this week, releasing a YouTube video which she used at the opening of a mining meeting to argue that Australia can now not compete with low-cost African projects.
The evidence is unarguable that Australia is indeed becoming too expensive and too uncompetitive to do export-orientated business. Furthermore, Africans want to work, and its workers are willing to work for less than $2 per day.
That's a couple of excerpts from the video. Laura Jays, the marketing of Gina Reinhart's political message could do with some work, could it?
Yeah, well, that was just a few seconds of what was a bit of a rant that went for 12 minutes.
And that's 12 minutes you'll never get back.
Yeah, 12 minutes you'll never get back. I was having a debate in my office and around the halls of Parliament House this week as to whether she's a little bit crazy or very calculated. Well, I think she is particularly calculated and a little bit crazy. Most people were saying she was more crazy, less calculated. But I want to pick up on one of the things that she did say, that grab about her saying that Africans are willing to work for, you know, $2 a day. Well, the Prime Minister really seized on this when she was in Perth. But Gina Reinhart, to give her credit, she didn't say that Australian workers should be paid $2 a day. But Julie Gillard got away with saying, well, Gina Reinhart's telling us that we should just toss our workers a $2 coin and that should be the end of it. But that's not what she was saying. She was highlighting a pretty important issue at the moment. And we have seen over the last few weeks, especially with lowering commodity prices, the Olympic Dam expansions being put on hold, Fortescue laying off workers, Rio also shelving part of their diamond mine project. The real issue here is the cost of labour. And this is what a lot of these big mining companies are looking at. They're not blaming the carbon tax, they're not blaming the mining tax, but it's the cost of labour. So there's an underlying issue here. Gina Reinhart, be calculated or crazy, that is a real issue that these big mining companies are looking at.
Sally Wahaft, Laura's right that comparative labour costs is a significant issue, particularly in the context of falling commodity prices. But I suppose when you're addressing these issues, you need to tread fairly carefully. I wouldn't say that that Gina Reinhart did a great job on focusing in on the correct issues there.
I think that she probably did a lot of damage to the legitimate arguments that were just pointed out. And interesting that Alan Jones didn't include Gina in the the wreckers of the place. It's just so... I mean, I don't know. I don't think she's crazy.
No.
And I think she is very calculating, but I think she doesn't get good advice or listen to people.
Whoever wrote that those words into that auto cue,
I reckon she wrote it herself. Yeah. I reckon she wrote it herself, and it's truly offensive to hear one of the richest human beings in the world, you know, complaining. You know, a couple of weeks ago it was, you know, stop drinking and smoking and get out and work harder, and it's just offensive, and it's a pity because if Gina Rinehart was a different kind of woman, a different kind of person, she could be doing remarkable things, great things, in the position that she so fortunately holds, partly through just the blessings of her birth, and partly because she's an incredibly talented businesswoman.
Yes, well said, well said. Yep. I think it's wrong to think of her as anti-Labor, though. Mm-hmm. I grew up... some of the first press conferences I covered were Joe Bjelke-Petersen and Lang Hancock in the parliamentary annex in Queensland, where he was kind of throwing out the lines about getting, you know, luring Indigenous people to a central location and poisoning the flower so that they couldn't reproduce. And, and this from a man who reportedly had a tribe of Indigenous kids.
Yep.
So that was interesting. But I think... you've got to understand the frontier mentality that she was raised with. She was his right hand. It's an Ayn Rand view of the world. It's a philosophy that puts them at the centre. They are the big, bold visionaries. They are the entrepreneurs. And they look upon governments and the idea of the Commonwealth with disdain. Mm. So she's got nothing really in common with the National Party, the Liberal Party, more the kind of Reagan riding off into the sunset.
The Wild West, isn't
yes, it is
it?
Literally the Wild West, and it's worth remembering the dreadful fight between Lang Hancock and somebody who you would imagine, if you didn't understand that, should have been a great personal and political ally, which was Sir Charles Court. Mm. Both didn't hold with Indigenous rights, both were very conservative politically, and both were into opening up Western Australia as a state and seeing it advance. This is a quote from 2005 from Sir Charles. He said that Hancock's objectives were essentially selfish and personal, talking about Lang. Always at the end of the road, it was what was in it for him, not for the state. Mm. He used the words, he was doing this for the good of the state and the nation. But when it came down to the final nitty-gritty, it was always his overriding interests.
Interesting.
And I think that's perhaps the philosophy of the House of Hancock. Whether she's moved far from that or not, I don't know. It's for others to sort of judge.
One suspects that
perhaps
the prospects of a...
daddy issues there as well.
Indeed, yeah. One suspects that the prospects of a Northern Economic Zone are probably lowered by Gina's YouTubing this week. On RN Drive, we are destroying the joint, discussing the week in politics with Ellen Fanning, reporter from the Global Mail, Laura Jays, political reporter for Sky News, and Sally Warhaft, anthropologist and writer. Of course, a lot of the focus this week has been in America and the Democratic Convention. We heard today the speech from President Obama, yesterday from President Clinton, and earlier in the week, of course, from Michelle Obama. Let's just have a little listen to Michelle Obama's address.
And let me tell you something. I say all of this tonight, not just as First Lady, no. Not just as a wife. You see, at the end of the day, my most important title is still Mom in Chief.
Sally Warhaft, you're an expert in political rhetoric. You've written about the speeches that made Australia. What's your take on the oratory at the Democratic Convention this week, and Michelle Obama in particular?
Well, I think she was pretty fabulous. I mean, almost too evangelical, but from Australia, where we like a more easygoing, laconic kind of form of rhetoric, it may seem, as Kevin Rudd would put it, a bridge too far. But she was magnificent. I mean, the sort of confidence and the narrative that she sort of spelt out about her husband was, you know, incredibly impressive. But the star of the week by a million miles was Bill Clinton.
Yes.
And I think Barack Obama had a really quite there were several challenges Barack Obama had today with his speech. I mean, the most obvious one being the heights that he reached 4 years ago in getting into office. Could never, ever, he couldn't even try to rematch them, and he didn't, in a way. But Clinton kind of, I think, stole the show with the... I mean, he's such an extraordinary performer. He's so gifted. Even in a setting like that with thousands of people, you feel like he's talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
And within the address that he gave, there was so much detail. I read somewhere today that it was really the speech Barack Obama probably should have given, in the detail that and you know, Barack Obama didn't do that. But I think Michelle and Bill really made the president's job a bit harder in doing something truly, truly memorable.
Laura Jays, I know that Sky News reporters are rarely allowed to rest and are constantly broadcasting, but I can imagine that there was a little bit of interest in the American going-ons in the office and around the country this week. What was your take on the convention?
Of course. We played them live, of course, and then we had an hour and a half of analysis off the back, as you'd imagine. But look, I agree. Michelle Obama was pretty impressive. Today, Barack Obama himself, it was a hard act to follow. Bill Clinton, and I did read somewhere that for every line of script that Bill Clinton had written down, he did about another two lines of ad-lib.
Yeah.
So it just shows you what a just amazing professional, a different brand of politics in the US. It's just very impressive. But look, I was left wanting a little bit more after Barack Obama's speech today. It was very impressive. He kind of started in those ways where it's very intimate and then he builds to this crescendo. But the attacks on the rich and Mitt Romney, it all felt a little bit all over the top for me. Probably works better in America, but from an Australian audience who kind of lives and breathes Australian politics every day with Tony Abbott and Julie Gillard, there's a few I wanted to roll my eye moments. But look, I think in the end that this convention or this week of conventions, that Mitt Romney really needed more out of this week. He needed more of a lift in the lead up to the election, but I think Barack Obama got it.
Ellen Fanning, have you been tuning in to the speeches this week?
Look, I just looked at her and thought, I mean, I've got a birthday tomorrow, and it's
happy birthday.
Thank you. And it's just one of those moments in life where you go, look at this woman. She is busy. She clearly goes to the gym.
We asked her to be part of this panel. She wasn't available, unfortunately.
90 minutes a day to have arms like that, Ellen.
I tell you.
Sure you've got that.
Did you see those arms, Sally?
Yeah, they're beautiful. Isn't it interesting, though, you know, they've got We Are Us. No, we've got We Are Us, and they've got Yes, We Can.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of depressing. We've got Gina, they've got Michelle, we've got misogynists and nut jobs, and they've got change we can believe in.
Oh, and fabulous arms.
And fabulous arms.
I don't understand where I've gone wrong. I really don't. It's just ill discipline, I think.
Well, on that highfalutin note, we are going to have to draw a line under our panel this week. On the bright side, it means that we won't have to discuss the Gonski report and the government's response. So there's something. We can draw a line under it and have everyone just thinking about Michelle Obama's arms. Thank you very much to all our panellists this week. Ellen Fanning, reporter for the Global Mail. Laura Jays, political reporter for Sky News. And Sally Warhaft, anthropologist and writer. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks, Julian. Bye, everyone.